And we are joined once again on The Scoop today by Brad Gelber of The Bills Wire. Brad, hope your Christmas and New Year's were both enjoyable. And we've got a full slate of playoff games coming up this weekend, so plenty for us to talk about to ring in 2019.
Yeah, they were definitely enjoyable, but it's good to be back and have some playoff football to focus on at this point.
We, I think, need to start by looking at a pretty toxic situation that is unfolding with the Pittsburgh Steelers. Now, depending on who you talk to, if you talk to sources within the team, Antonio Brown has not asked for a trade. If you talk to sources outside the team, Antonio Brown has asked for a trade. And this kind of stems from an incident in where he was basically left the facility after being frustrated with how things have played out, and the team said it was for an injury. It was not, and now whether or not, whoever you believe, he may have requested a trade out of Pittsburgh. Just how volatile has this situation been, and this season in general for the Pittsburgh Steelers?
Yeah, you know, it obviously stems back to the whole Le'Veon Bell thing, and we thought, you know, there was no way he'd sit out the whole season, and then lo and behold, he does. And then further, they missed the playoffs, which, you know, if they're in the playoffs right now, you know, maybe this stuff isn't as magnified, because then it's like, well, Bell didn't play, but they still made the playoffs, and Connor had a very good season, and Antonio Brown missed that last game. But even if, you know, he had missed that, but he was going to play in the playoffs, who really cares? But because they missed the playoffs, I think a lot of this stuff is going to be amplified even more than it already would have been. So, yeah, you know, it's been a very interesting season for them. And I think that, you know, some of further on is too is just the criticism, you know, you've kind of heard from Ben Roethlisberger, and then you have some people saying he really deserves more of the blame than anyone else, because all he does is point fingers as the quarterback, the supposed leader of this team. And, you know, I was listening to an interview yesterday, and they were talking about how Ben Roethlisberger has kind of said in production meetings and whatnot that, or Mike Tomlin has said that Ben kind of thrives on drama, that he's a, you know, a quarterback that needs a little bit of drama around him to be at his best. And so at this point, there's plenty of drama around him. You know, the whole Antonio Brown thing is interesting, too, just because, as you said, some people are saying he wants to be traded. Obviously, the Steelers, you know, I doubt they're going to come out and say he wants to be traded, because that hurts their leverage if they are going to try and trade him. His contract also is one of the most difficult sticking points with this, because not to say they can't do it. I mean, we've seen big contracts be traded in the past, but it does make it tougher, because a team has to be willing to take on that sort of salary. But we also have to remember that Antonio Brown is one of the premier wide receivers in the league, so maybe a team thinks it's worth it to kind of put the money on the line, and they think that, you know, they'll swallow kind of the you know, the drama here to be able to get a player of that caliber. But it definitely is one of those situations where, you know, I don't know if we're ever going to get all the details. I think it made it worse, too, that, you know, the other night, that new TV show where people are dressing up like mascots and dancing on TV. And lo and behold, Antonio Brown is literally the first guest on that show. He was dressed up like a hippopotamus. So I don't know, you know, that I don't know what the timing of that was, when that show was actually filmed. You'd hope that it wasn't recently, because that just makes him look even worse. It didn't help the situation, but I don't think Mike Tomlin and Steelers fans particularly would have enjoyed seeing, after all that went on, him dressed up like a hippo on national TV.
Brad, just looking at some other things that that have happened, of course, the playoffs are upon us, which means that that we had the usual amount of firings that took place after the season. And there were plenty of them this year, including a couple of AFC East coaches, Adam Gase and Todd Bowles. But Mike McCarthy, who was fired during the season, that job is open. It looks as though the Cleveland job is going to be open, with Greg Williams interviewing, but not necessarily going to be able to get the job. And you've got Vance Joseph gone from Denver. So plenty of head coach openings. I'm going to put you on the spot here a little bit, but which one, if you were a, if Brad Gelber was going to be a trending name as a looking for a head coaching job in the NFL, which one would be the most appealing to you?
You know, that's a good question, and you have to take a lot of different factors in, I think, into that. When you're looking at a head coaching position, I think there needs to be, you know, who is the GM there? What's the power structure going to be like? How, you know, complete is the team around you at that time? You know, what opportunities are there for you to kind of, because, you know, some coaches come in and they want to have say over the personnel on the team. And if you have a GM that's a little more, you know, with a power struggle there, that wouldn't be the opportunity. I think you have to look at kind of the, you know, quote unquote culture of the organization. Obviously money plays a factor and all that, but, you know, this is interesting. And I think, you know, I feel like I might be a little crazy for saying this. I think that the Cleveland Browns job is one of the ones that has to be the most intriguing for a candidate at this point, simply because of Baker Mayfield. I think, you know, the Jets job comes with a lot because, yes, you have Sam Darnold there, but, you know, as we always know, New York is on a different level. As Rex Ryan would always say, you know, if you can make it in New York, you can make it anywhere. So being on that stage and with the media in New York City is a little different than some other cities. But I think that Cleveland just feels like they are trending in the right direction. Obviously, Greg Williams had them playing very well. You and I spoke about this. I thought that it was a little surprising. You know, Greg, I know he got the interview, but just the fact maybe Greg Williams wasn't considered more seriously. I don't know how seriously he's being considered, but it seems like they're open to other candidates. So he had them play obviously very well down the stretch there. But just the fact that Baker Mayfield has played so well his rookie year, and I really think he has all the tools to develop into one of the, you know, premier quarterbacks in the league. So I think that would be intriguing for me, especially when, you know, I think coaches are obviously competitive by nature. And if you look at a franchise like the Cleveland Browns that have been so bad for so long, to be the coach that comes in there and kind of turns things around for that franchise, you know, you're going to make a mark on that city, that team, the league as a whole. So I think for me, if I was looking at the different, you know, openings, I think Cleveland would definitely be one that was intriguing for me.
I do want to ask you as well, because I mentioned the Dolphins and also the Jets have parted ways with their head coaches. So now that leaves the likes of Bill Belichick and Sean McDermott. And it seems like with both cases, the Dolphins and the Jets, that they're going to be at different stages of trying to cultivate the roster. So a rebuild in Miami could certainly be possible. The Jets maybe are a team that it looks like they got their quarterback. They just need some more offensive playmakers. So now looking at this Bills team with McDermott as head coach and Josh Allen as their quarterback, where do you see them getting to in the next couple of years with that that coach and quarterback combo? And now that they'll be able to add some offensive skill players around what looks like their franchise quarterback.
Yeah, you know, the optimism is very high here, and for a team that just finished 6-10, you know, there's been a lot of talk about how the end of the year, the you know, locker clean out and the after the season press conferences and whatnot was the most positive many have ever seen from a 6-10 team. The feeling is just this is what we expected. They had to do a lot of shedding of the salary cap. They were, you know, they did not have a choice when Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott came in due to the prior regime. They were kind of just strapped, so they had to get out of this situation. And on last year, you know, it was a bit surprising. They didn't expect for that playoff run, and it just kind of happened. So this year was really what it was expected of it. In my preseason predictions, I actually had the Bills at 6-10, so they finished exactly as I thought. But, you know, there's just a lot of optimism, as you said. Really, we know this is a quarterback league, and the way Josh Allen handled his rookie year and looked to improve in a lot of areas, especially that last game, it was really one of his most complete games. So the fact they now have over $80 million in cap space to be able to spend to improve the offense around Josh. The defense was very good this year. They're hoping to keep a lot of those guys together. Obviously, they lost Kyle Williams to retirement. But, you know, they have a lot of good playmakers on the defensive side that are young. So the thought is, as you said, there's now stability within the organization with Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean. And they just let go of several of their offensive assistant coaches. Their offensive line coach was one of the guys let go. Their special teams coach was one of the guys let go. Their wide receivers coach. So they have some guys to replace there. But overall, the coaching is going to be pretty stable, and so they can kind of go in and continue to build, not have to worry about reshuffling and doing all that. So there is optimism, and as you said, with Miami and New York kind of in flux here, again, as always, you know, New England will be the favorite for that division, but I think the Bills at least have to have their eyes set on a possible wild card position next season. If not, within the next few seasons, that certainly has to be in the realm of a possibility, because this was all part of, you know, the quote-unquote process from Sean McDermott. So now that they're able to get out of that salary cap situation, they have to start producing and actually winning some games.
Brad, obviously, unfortunately for me, the Vikings did not make the playoffs. They came up short at the end of the season, and I found it interesting. In Mike Zimmer's season-ending press conference, he alluded to just how big of an effect losing Tony Sparano before the season started had on this team. And looking back now, you can kind of see it. It seemed like it took the wind out of the sails right before the season started. And the Vikings in the past have had instances such as Corey Stringer's death as things that have hung over a season right before things even get going. So just as a neutral observer, were you surprised at all that the Vikings ultimately did not end up getting into the playoffs?
Yeah, I think so. I think that, you know, when you look at kind of just preseason predictions or where people thought teams would end up, or even just talking to you as someone who's involved in the Minnesota sports scene there, you know, I think I was surprised they didn't ultimately make it, but I guess, you know, that's why the NFL is so interesting at times, as we see teams kind of go on a run, whether it's the Eagles or, you know, some of these other teams that are just get hot at the right time. And unfortunately, if you're kind of sliding at the wrong time, that ends up meaning you're not in the playoffs. So, you know, I know there's some question marks. I'm sure there's some frustration. Not quite the same season as, say, like a Bills team that expected to not be in the playoffs. I'm sure most people or Minnesota Viking fans expected their team to be in the playoffs. So, you know, unfortunately, that's kind of what I guess, though, makes it sweet when you do make it is seasons like this. So I'm sure they'll kind of internalize that and be hopefully ready to go when 2019 rolls around.
Yeah, Mike Zimmer, it sounds like, will have them getting that edge back that they missed this season. So hopefully they are able to get back to the playoffs next season. But speaking of the playoffs, looking at the games for this weekend, of course, you've got Indianapolis at Houston, an AFC South battle to start things off. Then Seattle at Dallas to finish things off on Saturday. Then the L.A. Chargers at Baltimore on Sunday, and Philadelphia at Chicago also on Sunday. I want to talk a little bit about Lamar Jackson and the Baltimore Ravens, as they had an interesting scenario earlier this year. Joe Flacco was healthy, but they opted to stick with Lamar Jackson, and he rewarded the Ravens by getting them to the playoffs, and now the youngest quarterback ever to start a playoff game. Were you surprised that the Ravens elected to stick with Lamar Jackson, or was it a situation that he simply played well enough that he really gave them no choice?
Yeah, I think I was a bit surprised, just because You know, out of all the rookie quarterbacks, Lamar was certainly labeled the biggest prospect, you know, behind probably Josh Allen. And just the fact that he was not a guy that came in, you know, you had some analysts and football people talking about how he needed to make the transition to wide receiver, which, you know, obviously is a bit ridiculous. But just the fact that he wasn't such a sound, you know, polished passer. But that's today's NFL. Look, like, that's what it is to be an athlete. You can sometimes, at least initially, before teams can adjust to you and get film of you and all that, you can get away with being more of a complete athlete and not such a, you know, polished passer. So I think Baltimore realized, and we talked about this in the past, that there was some pressure on them to probably play Lamar Jackson as he was the last remaining quarterback of that class in the first round that didn't wasn't starting. And it's not like Joe Flacco was playing well. He struggled. So I think that they kind of just decided that that was the right move, and obviously it did pay off for them. I am interested, though, to see, you know, versus a very good Chargers team, how he does under the pressure of the playoffs. This is a much different stage, you know, versus teams. Every team in the playoffs, for the most part, is a good football team. And once you get outside the wild card weekend, they're definitely a good football team. So I'm interested to see how he does in this situation. He obviously is an explosive runner, you know, a threat whenever he has the ball. But if they can kind of contain him and force him to stay in the pocket and throw, is he able to do that? And at such an early part of his career, that's asking a lot of any quarterback, let alone, you know, the one that was labeled the most, that had the most growing to do. So I'm interested to see how he handles the wild card playoff game this weekend.
Looking at some of the other matchups, I forget that Indianapolis had such a slow start to the season. They were 1-5, and now they find themselves in the playoffs. Andrew Luck playing very well, and playing a Houston team that slid under the radar as well. Just how good of a matchup is that first game of the weekend going to be between the Colts and the Texans?
Yeah, that's probably, you know, that might be my favorite game of the weekend. I think that Chargers-Ravens might be exciting just for what we just talked about with seeing how Lamar Jackson does. But both teams, as you said, have kind of flown under the radar. And yeah, for the Colts, I mean, what a run they made, winning 9 of 10 games to make the playoffs there. And, you know, Andrew Luck has kind of come back with a vengeance after his injury, and people kind of didn't know what to expect from him this season. Even, you know, I heard media people in Indianapolis saying they weren't sure what to expect from Andrew Luck, and he looks like he never missed a beat there. So anytime you have a quarterback of that caliber, you give yourself a chance, and they certainly have. So, and as you alluded to as well, I think Houston really has not come up at all when you talk about teams that, you know, are possibly making a threat to make a run to the Super Bowl. I've not really heard them mentioned at all. But they're another team that played well, and they've earned their chance. And Deshaun Watson is another we talk about athletic quarterbacks. That's a guy right there, you know, who's now in his second season, who kind of caught the league by storm early last year, and then kind of maybe his name's gone away a little bit outside of Houston. But that should definitely be a game that is one that, once whoever wins that one, maybe at that point they'll finally get some of the respect that they're due.
Brad, I did want to ask you, and I'm glad I remembered it. We can continue the playoff preview after we talk about Pat McAfee's debut in the broadcast booth. He had a typical Pat McAfee approach to the fake field goal from the Lions against the Packers, and I saw some buzz about his just presence in the booth. We get so used to some of these situations with former players where they come in and they're maybe more of a Jason Witten as opposed to a Tony Romo. Is Pat McAfee, does he need to be one of those next former players, that next wave of former players that comes in and gets some of these analyst spots?
Yeah, I think so. I think any time you can, you know, switch it up a little bit and have a presence that people enjoy, I think you know, why not? I mean, there's so many, as you said, more Jason Witten types that are guys trying to transition from being in the, in the sport to being in the media. And anytime you can do something a little different, I think it's good for the sport. And I thought it was a lot of fun that he basically predicted that fake field goal there, and the way he called it was great. So, yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, it's all about the entertainment value, and he certainly provides that. So, I think it definitely would make sense for him to be given that opportunity.
Back to the first weekend of the playoffs, Seattle taking on Dallas on Saturday. That'll be at 7:15. And the Seahawks, they did it again. We wrote them off at the beginning of the season, or at least I did. And now they make it to the playoffs. They're taking on a Dallas Cowboys team that was not trending the best heading into the playoffs, although they did come away with a pretty nice come-from-behind win against the Giants. Is this going to be another deep run for Seattle, or does Dallas have enough with their defense to be able to make a little noise in the NFC playoffs?
Well, I've kind of learned not to bet against Russell Wilson at this point. So, you know, I was never a believer in Dallas. I think a lot of people wrote them off, and they really did surprise me when they were on the verge of just total disaster, and it looked like once again Jason Garrett was on the hot seat on his way out. They find a way to win enough games and turn things around, and they're back in the playoffs again. It's just such an odd thing that seems to always happen with him. Right when he's on the verge of disaster, he's able to avoid it. So, you know, this is an interesting one, and it just seems like Russell Wilson always comes alive in the playoffs. So, you know, if I had to pick, I'd say I think the Seahawks get this one. But, you know, at this point, both teams surprised me. If it's quarterback, I'm going to take Russell Wilson over Dak Prescott. So, you know, we'll see how it plays out. But, he's just one of those quarterbacks, I think, that has always had doubters or always had people that kind of bet against him, and he finds a way to always get it done. And, you know, at the end of the day, you have to respect him for that.
Final game that we'll talk about of the weekend, Philadelphia at the Chicago Bears. Nick Foles going to lead the Eagles on another Super Bowl run because that's just what he does. This Bears defense, is that going to be enough to finish things off for the Eagles and keep them from repeating as Super Bowl champions?
Yeah, you know, I think it's interesting that the game's in Chicago, so obviously that gives the Bears a, you know, maybe a bit of a home field advantage there. You know, I think it'll come down to an interesting setup with Mitch Trubisky, obviously another young quarterback that has had his ups and downs so far in his career. And, you know, I think that Nick Foles, again, is one of those guys who just seems to be able to get it done in the playoffs, as we saw last year. You know, we spoke, I think, before the holiday break here about Nick Foles a little bit, and just how he, you know, it's pretty remarkable if he's able to get it done again, or at least get them close again. At that point, Philadelphia really has a decision to make in terms of, do they really want to ride it out with Carson Wentz? And at that point, can they try and, do they have enough confidence to trade away Nick Foles? Or is it just going to be this thing where they hold on to both quarterbacks? Or possibly could they even decide, you know what, at this point, we win enough games with Nick Foles, let's get what we can for Carson Wentz. So, you know, I don't know if that would be a direction they'd consider, but it's just pretty remarkable when you have a quarterback that doesn't play, you know, all of the regular season and then can come in the playoffs and get it done. So if they are able to beat Chicago here in Chicago versus that defense with Khalil Mack and those guys, you're really going to have to tip your hat there to Nick Foles and Doug Peterson and the Eagles team over there.
Brad, a pleasure as always. We'll see how this first weekend of playoff games turns out, and we'll have plenty of divisional playoff football to look at when we catch up with you again next Friday.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Seth, and hope everyone enjoys some wild card weekend football action.